5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. You know, the look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you bitch. Sir? Gia.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners and fans out there who have supported us in our endeavor to expand the show. We're trying to give as much content as possible out at the website. If you go to SasquatchChronicles.com, you can find extra shows. You can find additional content up there beyond what you're just listening to right now on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast player that you're using. If you get a chance, check us out at SasquatchChronicles.com. I know on Friday night, we discussed the Ruby Creek incident. Here's a clip from the show. September 1941. Jenny Chapman is home alone with her three kids in a place called Ruby Creek. Her eldest son, 9 years old at the time, comes running to the house, disturbed, saying a large cow is coming up the hill. Jenny steps outside. And to her horror, she sees a gigantic, man-like monster coming right for her children. She calls to her children, and they immediately run to their mother. The creature never flinches, never stops. It stands up and starts walking towards the Chapman house. Jenny gathers her children, and they run downstream to a nearby village. The creature then broke into the home, seemingly destroying everything in its path. It grabbed a 55-gallon barrel of saltfish, breaking it open and eating the contents inside. Mr. Chapman returned home to find large humanoid-like tracks all around his house, along with hair and blood from where it had broken into the house. Relieved, he found the tracks of his wife and three kids from where they had fled. Mrs. Chapman would later report the creature was about 7.5 feet tall. It had no neck and wide shoulders. It stood like a man and walked like a man, but it was not a man. This encounter is unique because there was so much evidence collected. The irony of this true story is after surviving this encounter, within 3 years, the whole family had passed away. Thank you. We also spoke to Dan, and Dan had, he has Sasquatch out on his property, has a lot of information he was sharing. He had a daylight encounter with one and gave a great description on what he saw on and around his property. So I want to thank Dan for coming on the show. Dan, if you're out there, thanks for listening. Thank you for sharing. Tonight's going to be an interesting show. We're going to talk with Christine, who is the author of 100 Bigfoot Nights. You can find her website. It's 100bigfootnights.com. You can find her book on Amazon. And it's an interesting encounter. It's different from what you normally hear. With Christine's situation, she moved into a property and a lot of strange things started happening. But I want to welcome Christine to the show.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you.
How long ago did these events begin?
The events, we moved in this house about 9 years ago. It was 7 years that we lived here that we heard it howling. But it began prior to that because there were incidents that were happening, but we had no clue. So I would say it goes back to when we first bought the house and we had things that we noticed that were strange.
Let's go back to the beginning. Maybe tell us about the house and how you came to get that, and then the things you started noticing, you know, sort of take us from the beginning and walk us through these 7 years.
Okay. Well, in the beginning, we retired from the military, and it was a chance for us to buy our first, you know, our own house. Well, we didn't have to move. We moved a lot in the military. And we found this house. This was the last duty station we were at, and we decided to purchase a home here because our children were in college and there was no reason to leave. And we found a house that was below market value, had a lot of damage, but it was in our price range. And it had the size and the rooms that we needed. It had 6 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms, and it was a good size house. But it was destroyed. So we purchased it, and since we were retired, we figured we could do the work. You know, it just took some elbow grease, and we're very handy. We learned construction. I come from a construction family, and we just thought we just needed a lot of work. So that's how it started. The damage in the house was very strange, and not thinking anything about it because it was overwhelming at times, we just decided, oh, well, it was in our price range, buy it, and then we'll see what we got ourselves into. We started renovating right away. We had to throw, you know, everything went out of the house because nothing worked. The stove didn't work. There were coals burnt in the oven, which we found strange because we thought, well, didn't they know to turn the stove on? Everything in the house was petrified, like it had been sitting for a long time. The curtains, the drapes, you could take them off the walls and they would be in the same shape as you removed them. The debris was in the garage, was knee deep, that my son had to take a shovel and shovel it out, and we didn't know what it was. It just looked like a bunch of stuff left. The garage had holes in the top of the ceiling at the 8-foot level, high up, in the drywall, where it looked like someone had punched and banged holes all along the top, like a tribe of woodpeckers had got in there and just popped holes in it.
An unusual place for holes.
Yeah. When we patched them, we had to get on a ladder and get up there. We were like, how did this happen? How do you put holes in drywall around the top of a garage, all the way around the top?
That's strange.
Every part of it. We couldn't figure that out. The doors, we had steel doors on the house. And they're real, you know, thick. They're solid, you know. And they were banged and bowed and bent. And it like someone, and the door jamb, the one to the garage going into the house and the one to the back door was clawed to death. Like somebody had clawed deep gouges into it. We had to replace those door jams, you know, break them out. Every door jam in the house was broken, busted, like they couldn't turn the knob. Like they just broke out the jams. We replaced all the, I mean, it was so much. It was overwhelming at times. We just kept finding things. There was a hole in the roof outside the bedroom window, the master bedroom window. There's a roof on the front of our house that covers the porch. And there was it looked like a meteor hit the roof and bounced. Because when they pulled back the tar paper and the roofing, the 3/4-inch ply, you know, the plywood, was like someone had stepped through it, had a hole in it, and it was cracked and bowed, you know, just cracked out. And even the roofer, we couldn't figure out how somebody could have done that because the shingles themselves weren't busted. It was just the plywood underneath. And it wasn't rotted. There was no water damage to rotted it out for it to, you know, how you walk on the roof for it to have collapsed.
Right.
It looked like somebody just busted through it. And it was weird. So, of course, we had to replace that. The house had 22 trees that we removed. There were trees all around it, including the front, where you couldn't see the house. You know, the backyard had no sunlight. You couldn't find the ground. There were so many trees and so much debris back there that you couldn't see where the earth was. And one of my sons took, I think it was 80 wheelbarrows out of there. There, we removed every tree on the property. There's a big swimming pool, and the pool was full of battery acid, you know, I mean, anything you could find in a pool. The little fence they had around the pool, which was a little like a picket fence, was busted and crushed in certain places, and parts were missing. We couldn't figure out how somebody would do that. I mean, I can understand one of the planks would break or, you know, might get crickety and fall over. But
yeah.
These were actually busted. They were busted in sections, just sections missing and broken and busted. It was like somebody purposely did all that. There's just so much. I could just go on for days about it, and I'm a little embarrassed to say we bought it, but we really needed a house, and we really needed a place to live fast, and because we had to vacate the base. But we live in a neighborhood in a beautiful part of town. The town was rapidly growing, and the housing tract we live in was, I won't say new, but it was probably about 10, maybe 13 years old at the time.
I mean, it sounds like the house was maybe abandoned.
Everybody says so, and the more I think about it, I have to agree with that. Because none of the toilets worked. Nothing worked.
Right.
Nothing
when
worked.
When did the first unusual event start happening?
Well, first I noticed that there were people in the forest. There is I didn't know it was a forest at the time. I thought it was just a plot of land across the street from our house. I'm not familiar with the whole state and not from here. And I don't know, you know, to me, I'm used to having housing tracts and people living. Across the street, there is a vacant lot. And it goes across the whole front of our house and around the corner. So we have no neighbor across the street. We have only neighbors to the right side of us. I thought it was a plot of land that they just couldn't build on because there's water drainage that goes into that part. And I figured that was just, there's a lot of low-lying areas, you know what I mean, where the water accumulates. And it was just a drainage for the housing tract. I had no idea that it went way back in and, you know, that it was as vast and traveled as far as it did. Never
right.
looked at it from an aerial map. So I thought it was just a vacant piece of plot where they couldn't build a house because it was lowland, you know, low line.
Right.
And I first noticed that there were people over there. And I thought they were transients because I could hear noises and sounds and I could see shadows moving and you get creeped out because you could hear it. You know, you'd see things moving. When we'd come home at night, or when you were outside in the evening, you know, you could hear it's like something's moving in the forest. So I thought it was transients that were staying there until it got to be wintertime. Now, in the wintertime, it's freezing. It's 30 degrees outside. And I couldn't figure out why there were people in that forest staying there in the dark without any fire, you know, without making a, you know, something to warm them.
You would notice if it was a regular camp.
Yeah, like a homeless camp or something, you know, where the people were camping there. Or maybe teenagers, you know, playing in the forest, but I couldn't figure that out. That was baffling. It was, why are they there? It's 30 degrees outside, and no one's over there. They could make a fire. Nobody cares, you know. They could make a little, you know, thing. I wouldn't care. And that was the first thing that bothered me. I would hear voices outside, you know, mumbles and different sounds, but I also would hear them in the house. I had the feeling that one of our neighbors was a peeping Tom. And I often told my family that. I kept saying, because I'd be up late at night, you know, working in the office, you know, doing the construction, handling the bills, whatever. Or I'd be in the family room watching TV. And nighttime for me is very peaceful. You know, sometimes I get more work done in the evening. And I would be up late doing that. And I would hear somebody outside the family room windows or outside the office window out here. And I could hear mumbling voices, and I kept getting the feeling that someone was trying to peek in the house. You know, like there's somebody sneaking around the house at night. And I kept telling my husband and our sons that I thought one of the neighbors was a peeping Tom, that we had a peeping Tom in the neighborhood. And, of course, they just laughed at me and said, no, I don't think so. That's ridiculous, you know. And I kept telling him, but I hear voices, and I hear sounds, and I hear banging, you know, it's like, weird. But of course we ignored it. And, you know, I live with my husband and my three sons who are all adult men. Our youngest at the time when we moved here, I think was 16 or 15, but the other ones were 21 and 22. And they didn't worry about anything. They were busy, you know, it's like, oh, don't worry about it. No one's bothering. And then the other thing that started happening was our car battery started dying. Now, we come from LA where everything is locked. And here where we live, people don't always lock everything. And my husband wasn't locking our vehicles at night. And the batteries kept getting drained. And we went through a month and a half of this happening, where we kept replacing batteries and batteries and batteries. And he even had a gauge installed, an alternator gauge, after he replaced the alternators, to show that it's charging as you drive, to make sure that something wasn't draining the batteries. And that kept happening for a while. And I finally told him, I said, you need to lock those doors at night. I said, because I get the feeling when I get in the vehicle that something is touching them vehicles or getting in them or opening the doors, because you can open the door ajar and the light would be on, and it would drain the battery.
Oh, sure. Right.
And I'm thinking that these transient people who are freezing in the forest
are
getting in the cars at night. You know, they're opening the doors, and they're sitting in the vehicles because that would be a way for them to keep warm.
Sure.
And I said, you know, or teenagers, you know, our side of the cul-de-sac is pretty isolated. You know, they're coming from the forest, they're sitting in the cars, they're making out, and they go, whatever. To lock the vehicles. And he kept telling me, well, we don't live in L.A., and, you know, we're in a safe neighborhood, and, you know, I don't feel the need to do that. And finally, I insisted. I said, look, I want these vehicles locked, and I want the house locked, and I want the windows locked. I want everything locked at night, because something is not right. You know, as a woman, we get feelings.
You could sense it, sure.
We can sense when it's not safe. Men don't sense that. Men don't think that way. So he started locking the doors on the vehicles, and lo and behold, we haven't had a dead battery in 5 years. Lo and behold, it solved the problem. Then after that, our sons, we had two of our sons, kept putting food in the forest. They, with the both of them doing it, it was more than once a week. They would put food that was going bad or getting ready to turn bad. mostly, and the ends of the breads and, you know, stuff like that.
They were just throwing it out there for the animals, right?
Yes, because they thought they were feeding the rabbits and the raccoons, you know, little animals.
Sure.
And so they kept doing that. Our middle son, who came home late from work, as the years went by, you know, as a few more years went past, he wouldn't go near that forest. He kept saying, I hear noises, I hear sounds and screams, and I get the feeling something's watching me, and the hair on my neck and my back stands up. He says, some nights I can't get into the house fast enough. He kept having feelings he couldn't understand them, but he kept feeling that something's watching. I always felt that way too, and especially when we'd come home late at night and we didn't have any lights on the house. You know, you forget to turn your lights on because you leave when
sure.
It's daytime, and then you come home after dark. Well, we did that a lot. We would come home, and my husband would be the one with the keys to open the front door. And I would be standing on the porch behind him, naturally, because he has to try and, you know, use a lighter or whatever he could to see the hole to put the key in. And it always, I felt like something was just right there watching. And it would give me the chills. And the minute he'd open that door and I'd get in the house and lock it, it would be like relief. Like, oh, my God. I always had the sense that something was around. But I didn't know what it was. I had no clue. And you would never think, you know, Bigfoot, ever.
Sure.
So all these things were happening. I used to get something used to scratch on the house at night. And when I would be in the office alone, I'd hear it clawing and scratching. Like it was bugging to get my attention. And it kept doing it on the wall on the right side of me where we have like a cove. Our house has got a lot of angles in the front. And the porch, which is goes across, and then you go to the garage, you know, to the driveway, has a cove in there. And we put a table with two little chairs. And I kept hearing something would claw right in that cove on that wall. And it would do it at a high level. And it would just go down the siding. I could hear it down the siding of the house repeatedly. And we have a big bay window behind the desk, you know, before the cove. But if you looked out the window, you wouldn't see anything because it doesn't see in the cove. But I would still look every now and then, but it was just pointless. But it would keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And I kept thinking, if there's an animal in that wall, after 3 months, it's got to be dead. There's no way it could be living in that wall because it was only in the one wall. It wouldn't go from that wall to the adjoining wall or to the next wall because I would put my ear up against the walls and listen, you know, listen, because I thought, well, maybe it's a rat or a bird that got in between the siding or a frog or... You know, anything.
Yeah.
That could
Did you find scratches on the outside? Did you find scratches on the outside?
No. Never found anything. Never found nothing. The siding, it's hard to mark siding, but I never saw any marks on the siding. I don't think I really looked, but you know, we have to power wash the house every few years because you get a lot of, you know, dirt on siding.
Sure, right.
But no, I never did. And I used to tell my husband about it too. And, you know, we never went to look. We just ignored. We were so busy.
So we were
renovating the house.
So did the events escalate?
I don't know because all I know is there was weird things happening. And during this time, after we heard it howl, at the night that we heard it howl, we figured out what it was, howling, and an investigator came over to the house, and we started going through all of that, which is a whole process, which is what the books are about. The books are about what happens to you as a family. Like, you don't know anything about these things. You don't know anything about anything, and all of a sudden this happens, and then you fill out a report, and then you have The gentlemen show up at your house, and then you go through the whole process. And it's the process that we went through, and day by day what was happening. And
the investigator you brought out was from, he investigated Bigfoot, obviously, correct?
Yes, yes.
At what point did you think it was Bigfoot?
It was after we heard the howling. It was after we heard it, and we couldn't believe what we heard, okay? It was a sound both of us, my husband and I, had never heard before. It was something we couldn't identify. And we, I don't want to say our ages, but between the two of us, we've heard a lot of things. And we couldn't identify this. And it was scary, frightening, and a little unnerving to hear that in front of your house. So the next day, I went on the internet. I was on it that night and the next morning and all day. And I'm listening to, typing in animal howls and screams, animal howls and screams. And, oh yeah, prior to this, we had our dogs barking. So there's a lot involved. And I couldn't find it. If you've ever typed in howls and screams on the internet, it brings up a ton of stuff. And Bigfoot is one of them, but I ignored that because that's not even, you know, that's not possible. So I listened to, you know, coyotes and, you know, every animal I could possibly think of, even ones that didn't even live in the state. So I'm thinking this animal was howling and screaming and we need to know what it is.
Right. So at this point, you haven't actually, haven't seen anything.
No.
And then you decided to call the investigator out. You kind of looked on the internet, kind of figured out, well, maybe this is a Sasquatch.
No. And my son played it. He came down because I was frustrated. I'd been playing howls for a day and a half. And he came down and he said, why don't you sit? I sat on the couch because I had a headache. And he said, let me see what I can find. And he started typing in howls. Well, him, not excluding Bigfoot, started playing those. And I didn't know it. And he played one that matched. I said, oh, my God, you found it. What kind of animal is it? And he looked at me. He said, that's a Bigfoot. And it was a Bigfoot recording in Ohio, 1994. Except the one we heard was louder and clearer. But I couldn't believe it. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, no, that's what it says on the internet. That's what's howling. So we called my husband in and he listened to it. And of course, he immediately identified it. Yes, that's what we heard, only louder and clearer. So then we were sitting here. My husband just leaves because he's like, okay, it's a Bigfoot. Me, I'm freaked. It's like, you got to be kidding me. This can't be happening. This is insane. This is across the street from our house in a neighborhood. We're not in the mountains. We're not in the you know, way in the outskirts. We live in a town where there are families and neighbors. And
they'll access those kinds of places.
Well, I didn't know that. And so I was floored. Well, then that's when I couldn't get off my mind. Because now I'm thinking, but prior to this, we had put cameras on the house. We had put microphones on the front door and the other, because I had kept feeling like something was wrong all the time. And the dog kept barking, Foxy. She kept waking us up, and I mean, it was horrible. But what happened next was I couldn't get it off my mind, because I'm terrified of them. Would never look for one, never go in a forest, never even want to be around one. I kept telling my husband, it's in the neighborhood. There are children. We have to notify somebody. We have to tell someone that there is a Bigfoot here. Because I'm thinking the neighbors don't know. Nobody knows. And that thing is living in the across the street or, you know, going in the forest. And he kept saying, you know, do what you want to do. In other words, I said, well, I found a website where you can report it. I'll fill out a report. If anybody comes by or whatever, at least maybe there's another sighting. I tell him maybe there's somebody that saw one and this will help to figure out what it was. They saw, you know.
So who did you report this to?
Throw it out. Well, I don't really want to say the name of the, I'm sure you could guess.
Let's say the name wasn't BFRO, by chance.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you could guess. But I filled out the report online, and then I didn't think I'd hear back from anyone because I thought it's just, you know, all I could do is give the minimal facts I had. You know, we were outside. My husband set up the Halloween decorations. He was adjusting the spotlight, and this thing started screaming. And this, I identified it by listening to a recording on the internet, and all we heard was it hollering, and it was welling. And I didn't think we'd actually get a response. And I think I was thinking, well, you know, I'll just put it on paper, put the report in, and at least I did my part to try to, you know, notify someone. And so that's what I did. Well, a week later, in the meantime, I'm freaked. So I'm listening to my microphones. I got my cameras on. I can't sleep at night. I'm stressed.
Did the vocals continue?
No, I didn't hear any more vocals. It didn't yell again like that. Heard other things, branches breaking, snapping, you know, different things, but nothing I could identify because,
right.
You know, I'm not used to, I don't even know what lives in a forest. I've sure. never even been in one. So, you know, it could have been all normal sounds, but I didn't know it at the time. I'm just listening to any sound of anything sneaking around the house or, you know, I'm freaked.
Did the investigator come out?
Yes.
And what happened then?
He called me and he came to the house because he lived nearby. And he said, I want to come over and meet with you. So he came over and he was a very nice gentleman. He had been doing it for 25 plus years or whatever. And he asked us questions. They ask a lot of questions. And we answered all his questions. And he asked about the dogs because we had four dogs at the time. I think it was three or four. I can't remember. But we told him about Foxy. Foxy, our oldest dog, she's big. She's about a 110-pound dog. I said, yeah, Foxy. Drives us nuts. 2-3 o'clock in the morning, that dog is going off. She does it every time. It was getting to the point where the minute we went upstairs and went to bed, Foxy would be at the bottom of the stairs. And I'd tell her, Foxy, go to sleep. We're going to bed. Go upstairs. Not more in bed, 5 minutes, and that dog is welling. She is going off. Like a five-alarm fire, barking and barking and growling and barking. And she's standing, she would put her head on the windowsill in the dining room, which is directly below our bedroom, and she would watch the forest. She would just lay with her snout on the edge and look out the window. And she could see directly across the street and the front lawn and all that. She kept doing it, and we'd come back down, and we'd talk, and she'd look at us, and we'd say, Foxy, you know, we'd turn on the outdoor lights, we'd look around, we'd look at the front lawn.
Was this about the same time each night that she would do that?
Yes. It was always happening in the wee hours of the morning, between 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Always in the wee hours, she was
dark. What did the investigator have to say?
He asked us questions, you know, what time did she bark? When did she bark? How frequent did she bark? What kind of barks? Because Foxy also did another bark, which was, we told him later. But
and what did he tell you about what was going on?
He didn't tell us anything at that point. He didn't say anything. He also asked if I'd ever seen anything strange. Now, that's why I back up the story. One night when Foxy did that, I got tired of coming downstairs and trying to see what she was barking at. So one night I decided the minute she starts to bark, I'm going to look out that bedroom window upstairs. I'm going to look at the front lawn. I'm going to look at the south side and see what she's barking at. So she started to bark one night, and I looked out the window. And I saw a strange-looking creature, and it came out of the pathway, because there's a pathway to that forest directly across the street from our house, across from our mailbox, actually. And I saw it come out of the pathway, and it was walking towards the corner, going towards the corner neighbor's house, because as you go around the bend from our house, because our house kind of goes around the corner, there's another house. And then across that street, which is on the street behind us, there's a big park. It came out of the path, and it walked along the easement. And I could see it in the moonlight, and I'm watching it. And it looks like, to me, a hyena.
Because so it was walking on four legs?
It was walking on four legs awkwardly.
Okay.
It had a sloped, I could see the slope back. I could see the head, you know, the sloping of it, and the way the legs were moving, which looked weird. But I couldn't see its face. And I kept trying to look and look and look, thinking, turn, you know, because you're thinking anything that's walking, it's walking to my right at this point. It's going from the forest pathway to the right of me. And I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, if it just turned its face a little, I could see a snout or see something to identify it. So I'm thinking, turn your head so I can identify you. And I'm looking at this weird-looking creature as it's walking. And it never turned its head or looked, because I was never able to see the shape of the face like you would normally see, you know, an animal face. It was like the face didn't exist. I don't know how to describe that, but it was walking away from me. It looked big. It looked pretty big, but I don't know. At this point, I'm looking, you know, from my raw eye through the window, so I have no clue on size. You know, I'm not swift on that, because it's not like I studied the forest and could relate size to street to, you know.
Sure.
I just saw this big creature. Well, I told him about the creature.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, after it, I told everybody what I saw in the house. And, of course, they said hyenas don't live here. You know, they just said hyenas don't live here. I said, well, I'm sorry, but that's what it looked like. It reminded me of that because of the sloping. But I told the investigator. Yes.
Okay.
I told him that, and I was a little embarrassed to tell him, because I'm thinking this man's going to think I'm nuts. Because he asked, is there anything strange that you've seen? And I told him, I said, well, the only thing strange I saw was this hyena-looking creature that came from the forest. Why not creature? I called it an animal. It's a hyena-looking animal. That's the only thing that I saw that I find to be totally bizarre. And he listened very carefully, asked me questions about it and everything on it. And he said, okay. He said, you'd be surprised how many people I've interviewed that have reported seeing them like a hyena. That's how they look when they're on all fours.
Did he give an opinion about that?
That's all he told us at that point. He just told us that he had a lot of reports of people describing them that way. And I thought to myself, how would people make that leap? You know, I'm thinking to myself, I saw that thing, and I did not once think Bigfoot or to report it to anybody. You know, I mean, if you saw it, you would think it's a strange animal, hyena. How would you know to report that?
Right.
You know, to me, that I didn't understand that part. But I said, okay.
So what happened next?
Well, then we went outside, and he wanted us to show him and illustrate exactly what we did when we heard the howling. And my husband turned on our Halloween display because he wanted to take photographs of it. He said, I want to take pictures of it. And the blow-up tree on the front porch blew up. It's about, 8 feet tall, and it had ghosts attached to it and the bones. We had a whole display out there. And this was all new. The tree was new. The hearse with the blow-up hearse with the guy was new. And so were some of the glowing bones. We always add every year to our Halloween. We always go shopping the day after Halloween, you know, a month after, and get stuff for the following year. And we turned it on, and he looked at it, and he took pictures, and he looked across the street, and he said, I know why you heard that howling that night. And we said, why? He said, that thing didn't know what to make of that. He thought something bad had happened to the family. He said, they're very sensitive to their surroundings. And he saw that tree on that porch and all this stuff and thought something happened. Because it looked like, you know, somebody had, our Halloween looked pretty good. And that's what he told us. And then he said, I'm going to go in the forest and look around, and I'll be back to talk to you later. Then he left, and he went into the forest, and he was gone a while. And then he came back in and talked to us a little bit more. And I asked if he found anything. And he said, yes. He said, I found tracks by the creek. And I said, by the creek? He said, yeah. So then he got on the internet and showed us a satellite image of our house, the forest, the creek, you know, all the stuff, which we had no clue. And he described the you know, the possibility and why. And then he shows us, you know, south of us and east of us and, you know, on maps, you know, Google Maps. And he's saying, you know, in this area, this is going on, in this area, this is going on. They can travel nothing, 10 miles, you know, more than that a day. And, you know,
sure.
So, and he said, look, I'll be back to place some bait and maybe record some sounds. And that was all he said. He didn't really tell us a whole lot in the beginning, you know, other than some stories about them that he, in some cases he invested. He was more or less vetting himself. He showed us the reports he had written on the internet, all
sure.
the places he had investigated, the name that he goes by as far as investigating on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It was more verification of his credibility.
Right.
Like trying to tell us, this is who I am, and this is what I do, and this is how long I've been doing it, and you know, which we appreciated, you know, because
sure.
we don't know who he is, and you know, he's explained to us who he is and
right.
How long he's been working, and he seemed pretty credible to us. But you know, we heard the house, so even if you didn't believe what he was telling you, even if you didn't believe that these, you know, that he did this investigation, did that investigation. In the back of our minds, you know, I'm thinking, I heard it. So
right.
you can't dispute that, regardless
so
if
did,
you feel they exist or not.
Sure. Did your opinion change over time
mm-hmm.
I mean, of this person?
That's kind of like a hard question because
well, I guess
him and I are on
did,
different spectrums. Let's put it that way.
He
is under the belief
happened.
That... I'm sorry?
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, he is under the belief and... that they are harmless and they won't hurt you. And, you know, they you know, they're more human and, you know, all that stuff. Okay.
So
and
did the things that happened match up with what he said?
No. I mean, as far as his investigating, yes, he did a good job. I think, you know, he did the best he could,
sure.
but it's just after I saw the Bigfoots, when I saw them, that's when the opinion split, because
okay.
I don't care what you tell me, like how sweet and, you know, they're not going to hurt you. The minute I saw one, the minute I
saw
them,
the first time.
I saw them the first time the day before Thanksgiving. I had been during the investigation goes on and we go through all the steps and we believe, you know, everything he's told us because, and I wouldn't say everything, but we're a little excited and a little, I'm thinking, wow, we found one. Maybe they can come get it and take it. You know, the world's looking for this thing and it's here. And you know, you have all these thoughts going through your mind because you only watch, you know, television shows and what you see on them. So you don't put two and two together.
Right.
You know, you just don't. It doesn't connect. So we're going through the process. You know, the investigation, putting bait, taking photographs. I'm going into the forest. I mean, we're doing all kinds of stuff. Well, the day before Thanksgiving, which I had already informed our neighbors adjacent to us because the gentleman was going into the forest a week after we heard it, and I wanted to warn him. I was deathly afraid for him. And they were looking for the cats. Their cats keep missing. They had an incident where I keep hearing raccoons screaming. Horrible, screaming, like it's being
right.
murdered. And I hear it a few times, and then we heard it that night. And the neighbor's daughter was on their front driveway with her boyfriend. It was late, not too late, but I'd say about 10, 11. And she heard the raccoon screaming bloody murder. So she ran in the house and got her parents, and they ran outside. Her father and her mother, to see what was happening in the forest because they feed the raccoons and the cats and feed everything in the neighborhood.
Sure.
So they went running into the forest, and when they got to the path, something came down a tree at them. And I say something because at this point, you know, they don't believe that it's a Bigfoot. Two of them came down the tree and hit the ground and took off running in two different directions. And they could hear it. And when they got to the entrance of the forest, They froze. They were in shock because of what happened and the sound that it made when they hit the ground. I saw them on the camera, so I ran outside because I could hear them. I could hear the noise and ran out to see what was going on. And they met me on the driveway, the daughter and the mother. Her husband was in the forest searching for it. He was locked and loaded, and he was looking around. And they were scared. And they said, she said, "You're not going to believe what happened. You are not going to believe this, what happened to us." And so she tells me what happened. Her husband's in the forest with a gun chasing whatever ran in two different directions. And my husband and my son come out, and they decide they're going to go into the forest and search, too, with flashlights. You know, they're men. Want to go see what's going on. And so they had to go back home because she wasn't dressed for it. They were in the pajamas. And I came in the house, and I called the investigator and told him what had happened. And he said, "I'll be right there." And then he shows up, and then the neighbor had something throw a rock at him. And it was a big rock. And they go investigate that, and everybody's in the forest, and all this is going on. And when I came back outside, there was nobody out there. The men were all in the forest. They were getting their coats next door, and I was standing on the porch waiting for the investigator to show up prior to him showing up. And the stench was ungodly. The smell. I could smell like something rotted and died everywhere in the air. And it scared me, and I ran back in the house until the investigator got here and the neighbors came back from over to their house. And then we went back outside, and the smell was gone. For all of a sudden, there was nothing in the air. Then everybody's in the forest chasing these things, and all this is happening. They did it for a while. It was really cold. We decided to give up, and we came back in the house. And my neighbors went home because it was getting late. They said, "We got to go home." We came in. The investigator came in the house with us while we made a pot of coffee and talked to us about it. And some incidents happened in the forest with my son, our youngest son, where he said something was mimicking. Every time he stepped, it stepped. Every time he walked, it walked. It was near him in the bushes to the right of him, and he said, "Every time I took a step, I heard a step." And the investigator tells him that's what they call mirroring, and they'll mirror you. They'll watch you and repeat do what you do. After everybody left and everything was calm, I figured they would be gone, because any animal, I don't care, any animal that you would deal with, and even people, logically, I'm thinking, they would chase that night. Yeah, they would be gone for at least, I figured I could rest for at least 2 to 3 days, where I could just relax and think, okay, they're not coming around, and, they're not going to be there. Oh, yeah. I was sitting in the office, and I got my microphones on. By this time, I'm already identifying sounds of them. I could identify when they're there, when they're not there, because I can hear the pebbles hitting. They threw pebbles at us. You hear pap, pap. And I could hear the branches, pow, and I could hear the leaves shifting. You could hear it.
They were angry.
Yes. And so I had already learned to identify the sounds of them because I had been studying the forest. I had got a night vision scope out of my husband's military gear. The minute I found out that they could be there, and I was upstairs looking out our bedroom window every night, sometimes 3-4 times all night long, sneaking in the room. The dogs would attack me, because they were puppies, and they think of I want to play. And I'm like, just be quiet and sit still and don't look out the window because I didn't want to be seen. And I had been doing this for a while. And when I heard them an hour later, less than an hour after they were chased through that forest, I couldn't believe it. I said, "Oh my God, we got a problem," because that's aggressive behavior. That isn't, "Let me just get away from you and you found me." I grew up in LA, and believe me, you chase off a gang, you're going to get 10 back. Okay.
That's retribution.
Exactly. And I'm thinking this is not right. But the neighbors, the forest is pretty vast. And if you look at it through a scope, I could find the pathways and the leaves and the trees, but everything looked the same. You know what I mean? It doesn't,
Right.
Not a hunter. So I looked through it and I would see, okay, there's a tree and the colors of, and everything was in shades. So they were in shades of green, you know, from the scope. And I'm looking at different shades and, you know, if it has light on it, it's a different shade. And if it has, you know, movement, it's a different shade. And you have to learn everything. Everything's taught. You know, you have to, I figured if I looked long enough and listened long enough, I would learn.
Did you see anything?
Yes. So I went upstairs to look for them. And that was the first time that I saw them. And I couldn't believe it. I was looking at the forest, and I had been up there for a while. And my husband wanted to go to bed, and he's like, are you going to be done with that? I'm like, no. I said, I know they're there, and I have an idea where they are because the neighbors told me where they were, where they had heard, where they came down the tree, you know, on that part. So I knew they were there. I'm thinking, they have to be on this side. And so my husband goes to the spare bedroom, takes the dogs. He says, okay, well, wake me up if you need me. And I said, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to sit up here and keep looking, you know. And I looked and looked and looked. And all of a sudden, I spotted movement. And it was up in the thicket to the left of the path. And it was about the 7-foot level, I would say, you know, going up a tree. It was a thicket of trees. But it looked like there was a hole, like something had pushed the brush aside and had its head, and it was a dark hole where you could see, you know, if you look through the scope, you could see the branches and the tree, you know, you could see the pattern, the trees, the leaves, you know. And then all of a sudden, it was like a black hole right in the middle of them. And I'm looking at the stick, and I'm scanning, and all of a sudden, in the black hole, I see what looks like two eyes. And it's kind of leaning in and out, like rocking.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it leans out, and I could see, because it's scanning the front of our house, and we have porch lights on and stuff like that, and I think as the eyes would move, I could see it. And I'm thinking, what are you? And I'm looking, and I'm trying to identify it, because I don't know, you know, not an expert,
And so you know that rocking motion is an aggressive primate behavior.
Oh, well, didn't know that. I've seen a lot of things I don't know. But I kept thinking, what if it was an owl? You know, I kept thinking, is it an owl? Is it an owl? You know, what is it? Because it looked like it had big round eyes, you know, round, like big ones.
Right.
And I'm thinking, it could be an owl. You know, I don't know. Do owls sit 6 feet up in a brush thicket? I don't know. So I'm watching it rocking. It's moving, rocking back and forth, and it's also swaying side to side. So it's not only going forward in the hole, but it's also going side to side. Okay? And I'm watching this, and I can't make, it's just the eyes I could see. And till it leaned out a little bit further. And all of a sudden, I noticed that it had a face. And it was attached to something. You know, it was a head.
Right.
My mind's not thinking head, but my mind is thinking face. Oh, my God, that's a face. Okay? So I'm watching this face. And I can't believe that it's a face. And I watch it for a while. Of course, I have to take breaks in between because your eyes get very tired with the scope, and your arm does too. And I have to put it down and rest, and I'm having difficulty breathing now. My stomach's getting sick. I mean, all these things are emotionally are happening to me. But I want to see the face, and I want to keep watching it. But I'm struggling. So I look again. And I start to move the scope around a little bit to the right. I see movement. Where the thicket ends, where the tall trees were, there were smaller thickets. And I'm at an elevated level looking down. So I could see movement on the side of the tree next to where that head was. That head was in the center of the trees, but on the edge of the tree, I see movement. So immediately I focus on that movement. And it looks like something's sliding down, like it's leaving where the tall trees is, and it's going to slide down because this is directly in front of the street. This is directly, you know, where the street is. There's a street, 10-foot easement, then the forest starts. Well, it looks like it's going down, and I'm watching it, and it goes down. The thicket at this point, which goes to a low, is probably about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. And there's a old barbed wire fence in it. And I know this because we had looked at it, and I could see the fence. I know that now, but at the time, it had a barbed wire fence in it. So the thicket was kind of weaved into the fence. That's why it was a low that ran across, just a section.
Okay.
And it looked like it came down, and it started low crawling to go to the other side where there were more tall trees behind that thicket. And I'm watching it, and I cannot believe the size of this thing, the back. And I'm watching it, and I don't think it was, it wasn't on all fours. I just don't think it was on all fours because it wasn't sloped at all. It yeah. was crawling, and it was crawling, and the back was moving, going back and forth, and it was massive. And I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what are you?
Did you get the impression it knew you were watching it?
Oh, God, I'm so stupid at this point when I'm watching them. And this is like the very beginning.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be able to answer that.
Okay, no problem.
To tell you that, as I go on, over the year and a half of this happening, yeah, I'm pretty sure they knew I was watching.
Okay.
Wasn't too bright and swift in the beginning.
Well, nobody
I'm pretty
knows
sure they
in the
knew.
Beginning. I mean, it's a pretty much unknown topic for the most part, so that's quite all right.
Yes. So, I thought it was hidden, but I don't think so at this point. To tell you the truth, I know they were watching. They knew I was watching them by now. But I'm watching it as it crawls, and then I think I'm looking in that it's like it's going into a darker part where the shade is darker because it's further away from me. And the trees, you could see the, as they come up. But it looks like, darkness in the forest because the forest also has shadows at night. You also see shadows through a scope. And I thought I lost it. I thought, where did it go? Where did that thing go? Because it was right there crawling and now it's gone. Until I scoped further back. Like just past the first set of trees. And I saw what looked like a giant bush. And it looked to me like a giant bush because it was moving. It was walking. And I thought, that bush is moving. Why is that bush moving? And I thought, oh my God, that's it. That's him. He stood up and he's walking away. I couldn't see the head shape. I couldn't see the bottom, the legs. All I could see was this giant bush thing, and it looked like a bush because it had rough edges.
Right.
All I could see was it swaying and moving. It was moving further back in the forest. Well, once I watched that one, when I watched him as he moved further back,
did you
all
see
of a
more?
Sudden I start seeing more. Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Probably three or four others?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, because now I'm recognizing the color of them through the scope.
Right.
Now I'm recognizing the shade. It's like, you're that shade, the tree's that shade, I'm learning the shades of them.
Sure.
And so now I've watched that one, and I've watched that one, and now I know, oh my God, this is a shade of color. And then all of a sudden, I start to see them. I start to
How
see
many
the
were
shades
there?
Of color. I didn't count. I did not count. I literally, my brain went blank. I think I just blanked. I could see the movement. I could see multiple shades.
How many would you guess?
I would guess maybe five or six.
Okay.
Things moving.
Sure.
I think, to tell you the truth, my brain went blank. Like, it's hard enough to picture one, but then when you see that, and then all of a sudden, you're looking at the forest, and
these
shades of color. Yes. it's overwhelming. It was like, oh my God. And then I couldn't breathe. I was struggling. I had to sit on the bed. I was hyperventilating. My face was hurting from being distorted, and I didn't even know that. Because I guess right. When I was watching, I was cringing, and my face is in pain. My eyes, and I mean, I'm starting to just. I mean, I am literally melting down. I'm like, what is? I can't believe what I just saw. I can't believe what I'm watching.
Right.
Nothing makes sense. So I scoped it again, but I was able to capture a small one. There was one moving in a tree, and I decided I'm going to focus on that one because he was closer to me. He was closer to the pathway, more to my side. I had a better vision of him than the other ones that were moving around, and I could clearly see him in the tree. And he was sitting in the tree, and he was rocking back and forth like he was yelling, like something would be, you know how they show images of things howling at the moon, and how the head's sure. going back and forth, and it's up in right. the air and going back. I figured I'm going to focus on that one, because if he's facing sideways, and I could get a face recognition on him, you know, see the face.
What did the face look like, Christine?
The little one's face, he looked like his eyes were recessed, because the brow was protruding.
Right, they looked deep set.
Yeah, they looked deep set. Well, if that's what you call it. But to me, they look, I call it recessed. The eyes looked recessed because of the brow was more out. He looked right. like he was wearing a helmet. Like he had a forehead, and then all of a sudden it darkened about the brow up above the forehead line. And it looked like a helmet stuck to his head, like something you would glue on your head, like dark.
Anything like gorilla shape, a conical
yeah.
shape?
Yes, like that shape, okay. going around the head. The ears were like ours. They were flat up against the head, but right. they were simple. They weren't intricate. Like ours, I would consider intricate, where they have more of a design to them.
Right.
They were like somebody took a Crayola and drew an ear. You know how you draw a round ear with a hole? Like you just okay. draw it? Like right. a cartoon drawing to me. It looked weird. The face, though, he had a mug on him, like a monkey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know the difference between a monkey and an ape. I have no clue. But the mouth was protruding, and the nose came to the end of it, to the end of the mouth, like okay. down.
Sort of like a baboon?
I don't know what a baboon looks like.
Where their face is sort of stick out, kind of like a dog in a way, you know, it's more of a muzzle.
Yes.
Or was it more flat? It had the muzzle. Okay.
It had a muzzle. More of a muzzle. And the nose was at the end of the muzzle. Not on... It didn't have like holes where a nose. It had like a nose where right. it came down to the end. And there was a tip. Well, you could see it looked like it had a nose at the end of right. it. Not... You couldn't see the bridge of the nose or as it came down, I don't think. It was just like a nose at the tip. They would just, you could see a rise on the tip of the right. mouth. And it had a nose and it had a mouth. And it was screaming. Its mouth was open as it was going back and forth. And I got the impression it was screaming, you know, or yelling, or I don't know.
Right.
But I got the feeling it was making a sound. But I didn't hear it. You know, I didn't hear the sound or anything, but you could see it was making a sound.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know that these must be what you refer to as the daytime Bigfoots. Like you have some that come out during the day and some during the nighttime, and that you felt the daytime Bigfoots, as you described them, were more aggressive.
No, this was at night.
Okay.
So this one, these are the ones I was seeing at night with the night vision scope.
And
right.
the daytime Bigfoots. Like the type 3.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
I was just wondering about your different descriptions of the daytime versus the nighttime and them being more aggressive.
Yeah, the daytime Bigfoots, what I call the daytime Bigfoots, were the ones I would see during the day. And they would be sunning themselves. Now, they look different than these nighttime ones. Although, I will tell you, I have seen both together at night. But the daytime ones would be in the forest. I'll come to find out later they're the dog man. And I would watch them. And they had a different, they were different than the nighttime ones as far as the body shape. To me, they were shorter, smaller. They had patchy fur, like parts of it were missing, like where they had, I don't know, like a mangy thing.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
They're like mangy, like they had worms. They were thin.
Right.
I kept seeing ears. The ears are what stood out the most on those. The ears were on the straight on top of the heads, like they were stuck on there, like somebody had taken ears and stuck them, because
right.
they didn't turn. Like a dog. A dog has ears on top of his head.
Sure.
They're taller and longer. But if a dog hears something, they can sometimes, I've seen them turn their ears, you know, where they're, where
right.
they'll move them back, forward, you know, like to pick up a frequency. These, the ears look like they were stuck. They didn't turn. They didn't have any mobility to them. They look stuck on the top of their heads. That's what it looked like to me.
Right.
Their snouts were a little bit longer, but not real long. Not like you would see, you know, dog man term. They reminded me of werewolves, to tell you the truth. And I kept watching them and thinking, what are you? Because they also had claws, you know, on their hands. At the end of their fingers, they had claws. And they looked like the cartoon. You know how you used to buy claw candy for Halloween? How it's real thick and curved, real massive looking? That's what they looked like. They were thick and big, like they extended from the past their fingers. They had some other appendage, and I don't know what it is, on their wrist, behind their index finger, like where the wrist was. To me, it looked like a piece, a chunk of, like a piece of meat or something, like a protruding lump. I guess it could have been a dew claw, but it was a protruding lump that was on the wrist area. They carried their arms, I used to watch them, they carried their arms in front of them, kind of like a praying mantis. I want to say that that's what it reminded me of, with their elbows in, arms and, you know, their forearms in front, and their hands pointed down. They were always in a downward position. You know, the palms down, that's what I want to say, palms down. And that's how they would move through the forest. They were bold. They weren't good at hiding. They would try to hide, and they would camouflage and do things. But they weren't, how do I put it? They weren't very good at it because they were individuals. And when one wanted to move, he'd move. And when one wanted to go one direction, he'd go that direction. So to me, they were very odd.
They didn't work as a group.
No, not at all. That's the better way to put it, yes.
They didn't seem to work as a group.
Now, you have to think, I'm watching these things during the day, and then I'm watching these other ones at night, okay? I don't know the difference between what's what. I don't know that that's a type 2 Bigfoot or a type 3. I don't even know there's four types of Bigfoots.
Right.
I'm watching, when I first started watching them at night, I was shocked because I told my husband, they are not at all what the investigator told us they look like. Because he said they had human-looking faces. They were, you know, he described the most common type in the area. And he said,
because
this is the
most
common
either.
Type. I'm sorry?
Yeah, the BFRO doesn't know all this stuff.
Okay. I didn't know that, you know. I just, you know, I was getting my information there.
But, well, sure.
You know, that's where I'm getting my information from, until I saw him. And then it's like, wait a minute. He told us there was only one, and then he sat in the forest for 10 minutes one night and then came out and said that he heard footsteps and we heard a growl, and he said, well, maybe there's two because one will circle around you. When I saw him, there wasn't one and there wasn't two. There was a whole bunch of them. And
right. They
didn't look human-like. They looked like animals to me. They looked like beasts. They were horrible-looking beasts. And when I told him and I described to him what I saw, then he tells me, oh, you're describing a type 2 Bigfoot. And I'm thinking, what is a type 2 Bigfoot? Have no clue what that is. What is that? And he says, well, you know, he tells me, well, they're, I'll explain it to you later, but that's the kind that you're describing. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. So I'm thinking the daytime Bigfoots with the ears and the nighttime ones without the ears, you know, the ears are differently. I'm thinking that the ones with the ears are just baby ones, and they haven't grown up yet into the full-grown ones where, you know, maybe their fur just looks like ears. You know what I mean? It's just giving me the illusion of the ears, because maybe it's just standing on the top of their heads, and they look scruffy and a little thin, and because they're, maybe they're little, you know, they're babies. Maybe they morphous, you know, metamorphous from one to the other. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. That makes sense. It's like, okay, I'm not thinking two different types. I'm thinking these are the little ones, and they'll change to turn into these bigger ones, logically.
But there were two types.
Yeah, unfortunately. And what's funny is because during this time, my dad's asking me, he's like, well, what do they look like, you know? And I'm telling him, I'm saying, Daddy, this is what they look like through the scope of night. He's like, well, what are those daytime ones like? I'm telling him. He's going, you don't know what a Bigfoot looks like. I keep telling him, they remind me of a werewolf. He keeps saying, well, that's not a Bigfoot. You don't know what's in your forest. And he's saying, you don't even know what you look. I said, I'm just telling you, that's what they look like. These look different than these. I don't know why. I don't think they've grown up yet and got all their fur in. I don't know. Yeah, I have no clue. Until later, I'm thinking type two, and then as it goes, a lot of stuff happens. It's just a lot to go through. But finally, I asked the investigator, because now, finally, I'm thinking, I got to clear this up, because I don't know what I'm watching, and I need to clear up this discrepancy. And the thing about it is, one night I also saw another one, which I think was the kind he was referring to. They were very different from the other two.
Right, the Patterson type Sasquatch.
I assume that's what they are.
See, they had to go listen to our show so they'd know which types to talk about.
I don't know. You know, I can't follow. You know, I'm a housewife. I'm not.
I know you're trying to cram 7 years into this, Christine. I wanted you to talk about, you had mentioned things had kind of gotten worse to where they were trying to break into your home. And I realize I'm jumping ahead of the story.
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit about that? Why do you think?
Yeah.
Well, tell us what happened and what caused that.
Well, as when we started messing with them, and I mean the term messing with them, I mean investigating them, me videoing them repeatedly. They saw me. They saw me videoing them. They saw me doing these things. They could see me videoing from the windows. When we started messing with them, and that's why I say we had no business doing that. We had no idea what we were getting into. We had no clue. And they started messing with us. They started coming up to the house. They started doing all their talking and growling and coming up to the doors and threatening the dogs. And they hit our car. My husband was driving home one night, and they hit the back of the car. And I think they were trying to get him to come out of the car so he could disappear that night. They started throwing dead. They threw a live bird at our house. My husband and I start listening to them. We're up at night. They know it, and they're messing with us. And they know. We can hear them out there, and we can hear one throwing a fit. And all of a sudden, we see a bird go across our porch, and it's a live bird. And that thing threw that bird sideways. He took that bird and threw it as hard as you can, like a fastball. And it went across the front porch, went wham! It scared the heck out of us. I've never seen that before in my life, and the image is embedded in my mind of that poor bird going flying across the porch. Further, as we go into it, weird things keep happening. It gets worse. My son comes home. Something dips his truck in the back while he's sitting in it. As he's leaning over to get his bag, the back of his truck goes down and moves 2 feet forward. My son, our middle son, one night goes out there, even though I told him they were there, and because I thought I left the dome light in the car on, he goes out there, and all of a sudden, he's looking eye to eye with the one on the path, and that thing is staring him down, and there were several of them there, and I'm watching him through the night vision scope and watching the entire incident happen. Like, it was like a horrible scene in slow motion that you can't stop, and you know it's going to happen, but you don't know what's going to happen. And he stood there. He was frozen looking at it, standing by the mailbox. And it was standing on the path, and I could see its eyes. I could see it on the path looking dead at him. Not running, not turning, not moving, just looking at him. To the right, in the thicket to the right, I already saw there was one underneath the thicket. There were two laying back in the branches further in the forest, like laying on the up against the trees. So there could have been more, but I couldn't see where one ended and one began. But I had been watching them that night. And he came in the room and asked me what I was doing, and I told him. And then I said, oh, God, I think we left the light was reflecting on the windshield of the car, and I thought we left the dome light on. Well, my husband always goes out at night. He's the one who he's packing all the time, and he makes a lot of noise. And as long as you don't startle them, we're thinking we'll be okay, because you have to think we're going through a whole process of figuring everything out. My son sees one. Then one night, his girlfriend, every time she comes and leaves, he goes and waits for her outside. Everybody's always armed in this house. Or they are, not me. I wouldn't give me anything, but he goes out there, waits for her. Well, one night she leaves, and she knows the rules of the house. We have rules. We lay down rules. Know this, know that. Never go outside by yourself. You're always packing. You always make noise. You always open the garage door. You have rules. When you're living in this situation, you have rules. And she knew the rules, but she went out the door first. And she forgot her video that she brought, or something she had brought, that they had watched a movie. And he ran upstairs to get the movie, and he thought that she was waiting for him at the door, but she wasn't. Instead, she started to walk across the front porch to the driveway to her car. Worst mistake she ever made, because she turns around, and he's standing there on that path looking at her. My son goes out the door. In the meantime, we're in the office. We monitor all night. We got cameras on, equipment. We turn everything off when they say goodbye, because we don't want to hear them and we don't want to see them. And so we usually shut down the systems, shut down the cameras, shut down the microphones. We don't want to hear, I love you, we don't want to hear all that. He goes out there and she is frozen on the driveway. She can't take her eyes off of it. And he's standing on the pathway looking at her. My son immediately knows something's wrong because of the way she looks. And he turns her around so she can't see him. And she starts crying and losing it. And she's emotionally just going, breaking down. She's going, I saw him, I saw him, I saw him, I saw him. She melts. He's still watching him. And the thing about it is, the Bigfoot doesn't leave. He doesn't turn and go into the forest. He doesn't just step into the brush. He just stands there. And my son says, I'm watching him eye to eye, and he's not leaving. He's not moving. He's just standing there. So my son gets her into the car. He tells her to lock the door. He tells her she needs to leave immediately. His first response was to get her out of there. He figured he'd never make it back to the house because of the, it's quite a distance from the front door to our driveway. He's thinking, I'll get her in the car, lock the door, get her out of here. He figured he was doomed anyway. There was nothing he could do. Like when he saw it the first time, he said, when you see him, there's nothing you're going to do. You can't do nothing.
How far away is the path from the driveway?
Okay. Our driveway is about 30 feet long. Okay. And if you got a car there and another car there, you're less than 10 feet from the street. Then you've got the end of the driveway. The street is probably about 25 feet wide because it's two cars in two lane, two street, two cars, one in either direction. And then you have an easement of probably about 10 feet, and boom, the pathway right there, directly across from my mailbox, directly. You could stand at the mailbox, you would be 35 feet from path, from looking down the path. You could see all the way down it, but you would be 35 feet away from the creature.
Was he able to get her into the car?
Yes. He got her into the car. She locked the door. She rolled down the road. She did not, during this whole time, she did not know it was still there. He wouldn't let her look, and she didn't look again. And she's trying to talk to him, and she's crying, and she's telling him, I saw it. You know, she's still going, and he's trying to keep her calm. And he's telling her, I know. Just start the car and get out of here. And she's going, okay. And she starts the car, and he said the minute she started up the car, now, what was interesting about it, he said it was standing towards the, left side of the path, which means you've got, the pathway is about 10 feet wide, 10 to 12, you know, depending. But you have a path, and he's on the left side of it, and that means before the tree line. Then you go across the path, 10 to 12 feet, and then there's the next tree line, you know, then the next side of the forest.
Right.
What was interesting about it was my son said he didn't, now that he could have taken a step to the right or to the left, you know, a foot, 2 foot, and he could have disappeared right there because the forest is right there, the trees. He didn't do that. What he did was he did a U-turn. He went further out into the path to the right and did a U-turn and then walked down the path.
He's making his presence known.
Evidently. I mean, I don't know why that happened.
I wanted to ask you, I know we're getting low on time. I know we're trying to cram several years into an hour.
Yeah, I know.
But I wanted to ask you, is there water nearby? Is the area that the forest, I'm wondering, is there a lot of deer nearby? I'm trying to figure out why they're there, why they're in this spot. There has to be.
You said there was
everyone asks me that. Right? Everyone says, why are they across the street at night sitting in your forest? Why? Okay. The only thing I can think of, and I've thought about it, and I write this in the book, we have two parks, massive parks. One is one street to the right. The other is one street behind the other side of the forest. Okay? One park services all the Little League games. Every game they have, they hold there. The other park, which is to the right, they hold all the city events in, which are the food booths, the kids, it's got the kids' playgrounds, it's got different sections. And, I mean, they got lots of stuff in these parks.
So there's a lot of noise and there's food.
Oh, yeah, lots. Lots of food in either direction. And then if you go north of us, just a little bit a ways, like two blocks, there's the main road of town, and there's all the eateries and all their dumpsters. This section of forest across the street from our house, no one goes in it. It has a creek, and the water department has pipes where they feed water. I don't know. They got a manhole and cover in there and pipes, but there's a large creek. That's why I think they're there. They're waiting for the parks to close. The parks close at 10 o'clock at night. So despite all the events that are going on, those parks are closed.
They come picking the garbage.
Yep. And I can go to the park.
It's like ringing the dinner bell.
Yeah. Yes, because we don't have bears. We don't have things like that. We're in a city. So naturally, they don't put big locks on their dumpsters. You can go over there, and the dumpsters are wide open, and
As a matter of fact, the trash cans are overflowing with events, you know, after the events, and they don't even come the next day to pick it up. They may come a week later to pick it up or, you know.
Right.
They're not in any hurry. I mean, all you have is raccoons, I guess, you know, that could get in the trash. And you know, the events are held at night, and bins are there for the weekend. They're there for a week. They're not locked. They're,
sure.
You know.
What do your neighbors think of this now that they've experienced it, now that they have witnessed these events? What have you guys compare notes? Do you guys?
No. The neighbors next door to me, the ones that it came out of the tree at them, the woman used to walk her dog every night in front of our house and go down around the corner. And she says, I could have swore, I told my husband many times something was following me in that forest. She said, I could have sworn it. And she thought it was a bear. She said, I thought maybe there were bears. It was a bear because it kept following her. After the incident of it coming out of the tree, I haven't talked to her. I haven't talked to them. The only other neighbor that I talked to was the one that lives next to the forest, across the street next to it. It's the first house. And that's only because I saw them in her yard. They were getting in her yard and I on her roof. And the only reason why I told her was because after the second investigator gate came to the house, because ours brought another one after the Bigfoots hit the car, to buy the car damage, you know, the damage that they did to our vehicle, he just so happened to have another one in town that was visiting from the northern part of the state. So he brought him. When he brought him, we talked. They saw the car. They you know, looked at some of the evidence that I had collected, because I had collected, you know, audio recordings, and I started collecting things. He identified the dog man from a photograph, and he said, oh, my God, that can't be what's in your forest. I said, yep, that's what's there. And he said, you got to be kidding me. He said, I know what we call him back home, but the other term is dog man beast. He said, I won't go near that forest with that thing in it. After he identified them, because I knew that's what they were as of January. And they came in March the 4th, I think it was. Then I said, you know what? I have to tell those neighbors. I have to. Because they have little kids. They were 7 years old or eight. I don't even know how old, but they're small. And I saw those kids go in that forest the next day. They were in their plane. They were building a garden, you know, how you cut back like a little part, because they're right next to it. And I said, oh, my God, I got to tell them. I didn't want to tell nobody because I had already told the neighbor next door, and that was very uncomfortable telling them, you know, because people automatically think, oh, my God, there's something wrong with you. And even though the investigator had already talked to them several times, he had, because they'd seen him in the forest, and they went out and talked to him, too. So I finally had to tell that neighbor and that she needed to keep her children out of that forest. And that was the only reason why I told her, was because I couldn't watch those kids and I was worried sick about those kids. I said, them kids cannot be in that forest. But other than that, no, I haven't told any of them. The gentleman where they were in his yard, where I filmed them raiding his garden one night, they're an older couple. They've lived here for longer than this housing development. And I just told the investigator because I decided I'm not telling people anymore because I don't know if they're in danger or not. But what I do know is that we were a lot safer when we didn't know about them, when we were just living our lives. You know, things would happen, but we weren't afraid or we weren't being, you know, they weren't coming to the house.
They weren't bothering you at that point.
Exactly. It was after we knew they were there and we had messed with them and that all these things started happening. I mean, it just starts happening. So my husband said they're a lot safer not knowing because he was out there chasing them that night. He was out there. His garden kept getting raided. I saw him on the video camera as well, and I filmed him as well as those things. You know, I didn't post the video of him because that's not fair to him. You know, he's a person. But you could clearly see the difference between him and what's not a person. And I filmed it, and I was torn on it. So I was like, we need to tell him what he's out there chasing at night around his garden. And my husband said, he's better off not knowing. They were running from him, and they weren't threatening him. And the minute you tell him, and he goes out there with a gun, you know, like trying to chasing him, you've just escalated, like our situation.
You know, you telling or not wanting to tell people anymore, it's kind of like that old quote? You know, be careful when you look into the abyss, because it might actually look back at you. And sometimes ignorance is bliss. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I was a lot happier being ignorant. We were a lot happier. We spent 7 years renovating this house, and it's ruined, absolutely ruined, in one fateful day. You know, it's just been ruined since, and wish we'd never heard it, wish we'd never seen it, wish we had never even if we heard it and seen it, I wish we never investigated it, wish we never went into that forest, you know, which, and that's what people need to be warned of. You know, we can't be the only one in this situation where they come out and say, oh, let's go investigate. No, don't do that.
I was just going to say that. A lot of people don't understand. They want to run out. They want to chase after these things, but they don't understand what they're getting into.
Yeah.
And it can ruin a life.
It has. And, you know, I know that people aren't going to heed my warning. Maybe not. I don't know. But
they don't. But it is good to say it.
It's good to say it. Don't do it. You suspect they're around. You hear them, whatever. Ignore them. You know, don't be cautious. Be cautious. You know,
right.
But leave them alone. Do not invade their territory. Don't do it.
And that's what many Native Americans say also.
It is a good warning. Well, thank you again, Christine, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
I thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.